There was a time when jazz was thought to be the devil's music. Today, a jazz virtuoso is using the music to explore spirituality and devotion to God. His name is Victor Wooten. He's known best for his work in the Grammy Award-winning bluegrass jazz fusion band called Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. But for many, Victor Wooten himself is considered a messiah of the bass guitar. Victor Wooten's latest solo CD is called Palm Mystery. He joins me from Nashville. Welcome.
Hey, thank you very much.
I understand you have your bass there, ready to play a little bit for us?
That's the bass.
And that was a Beatles song.
Yeah, it was. I was asked, this Norwegian Wood.
Yeah, I love that.
It's funny, I was asked quite a few years ago to play for a John Lennon tribute show. And this was quite a few years ago. And I was like, I don't know any John Lennon songs. So the guy made me a CD of a bunch of them. And I realized that I knew all of them and didn't realize John Lennon wrote them. Huh. So I worked out an arrangement of that song.
Let's talk about the title of the CD. It looks, sure, at first glance, like it's called Palmistry. It's got a picture,
correct,
of your palm. But it's actually written Palm Mystery.
Right, right.
What does that mean?
That's a good question. And it's a question that I don't always like to answer because then the mystery's over. It's like life is a mystery. And life is also in the palm of your hand.
Let's hear a track from the CD. This is I Saw God. I love that line. I saw God the other day. She looked like you. He looked like me.
Thank you.
The whole CD, in fact, is exploring spirituality.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And it seems to me, as far as my own life goes, the message that seems clear to me is that my job, I don't even want to call it a job, my joy, I guess, is to help other people find themselves. To help, whether it's musically or through nature or whatever. And I usually use music because music's safe. You know, I could talk about, you know, God, religion, anything, but I just call it music and then we're safe. You know, no one's ready to, you know, to murder me if we disagree because it's just music. And I found that music is a great tool for finding a way to express myself and helping other people express themselves. So right now, I'm 43 now, and at this part of my life, it's not so much about playing the notes as it is helping other people find themselves and find the notes that they want to play.
You're known for being this amazing technical bass player, a god among bass players. You're known for developing several new techniques of playing the bass. I wonder if you'd demonstrate a couple of those. This thing called double thumping?
Yeah, this is actually something that my brother Reggie showed me when I was really young. I'm going to guess maybe 7 or 8. And I was trying to learn some songs. I think at the time I was learning a Sly and the Family Stone song with Larry Graham playing the bass. And this may not make a whole lot of sense over the air, but basically I'm using my thumb. Most people play with their thumb and they're popping like. That's the normal sound, which is very, very cool. So I learned how to do that. But when I was younger, I started learning drum solos on the bass.
How do you play a drum solo on the bass?
Well, that was the same question I asked, and I had to figure it out. And I knew that the Larry Graham style of, hitting the bass, what we call slapping, we used to call thumping back then because you're just hitting it hard with your thumb. That gave me the power, but it didn't give me the rapid-fire speed that a drummer had. So Reggie showed me how to use my thumb, but use it in a down and up motion, the same way a guitar player uses a pick. So normally when I'm hitting down with my thumb, right, in order to keep going down, my thumb has to come up.
Right.
So what I do, yeah, exactly, it makes sense. So like a guitar pick, I use my thumb on the downward stroke and on the upward stroke. So this downward stroke, if I double it, okay, so that's no added motion, but I can get twice the speed and the efficiency. So basically, I can double everything. Normally, when I'm playing thumb stuff, that's normal, but I can double it by a...
That is unbelievable. I mean, it's just amazing.
It's a little different, you know. And it's something that, you know, I'm the youngest of five brothers. All my brothers play. And in learning from them, I was just always inspired. I would think like any kid with their older brother or something, you want to be like them. So a lot of the techniques come from being a little kid trying to imitate my brothers.
And then there's your trademark open hammer pluck technique. Tell me about that.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that's a weird name, but when people started asking me to teach it, I had to call it something. And I'll try to explain this clearly. If I want to play a note, let's say this is an E on my A string, that's an E, okay? Now, what I might do is I might pluck an octave higher, and I'll get that E. Okay, so normal bass players, or the way I would normally do it, is just to thumb the E, low E, pluck the high one. But if I want to add speed to that or add another rhythm idea to it without having to add any extra motion, instead of just hitting this E, I'll hit the open string. Like I won't fret the E, and I'll hit the open string that the E is on, and then with my left hand fingering alone, I hammer down on the E. So what I'm doing is I'm hitting an open string, I hammer the E, and then I pluck the high E. So instead of this, you get...
I see. So you're hammering with your left hand.
Exactly, exactly. So when I play something like the old disco sound, with the open hammer, I can speed it up. So I can take some relatively slow concepts, like anything like that, and speed it up. And it sounds a whole lot faster, but if you were looking at me doing it, you wouldn't see any extra motion. So it kind of appears like the notes are coming out of thin air.
Let's play a track off the album. This is called Flex. At the same time you released the CD, you released a book called The Music Lesson. It's also a very deep spiritual search, and you are taking music lessons from this teacher who isn't really there or is not a real human being, let's say.
For many years, people have been asking me to write a book about my views on music because I relate music to life and I relate music to language. And to me, that just makes sense because music, you know, is a language to me. And what do you talk about when you use a language? You talk about life. So a lot of musicians, we just lock ourselves in a room and practice all day. And we don't realize that we're not living a life. So in other words, we have nothing to talk about. And our music expresses exactly that. So in this book, The Music Lesson, I offer a different view, a different outlook, a different method of exploring music. And instead of writing it as an instructional book or an instructional manual, like I knew people were asking me to do, I did it as a story, as a fictional story. I call it fiction so that there's no argument. I don't have to defend whether it's true or false.
Hmm. Through this book, you write One Measure at a Time, a song that is on the CD called The Lesson. Would you play that for us?
Sure, yeah, I'll play a little bit of this.
Grammy Award-winning bass player Victor Wooten. His new album is called Palm Mystery. There's more of Victor Wooten, including his beautiful version of Amazing Grace, at npr.org. Look for the music section.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. It's June, the midpoint for the year 2008. The year is half over. And to mark the occasion, All Songs Considered, NPR's online music show, is asking listeners to vote on their favorite records for the first half of the year. All Songs Considered host Bob Boylan joins me on All Things Considered now with some of the early results from the poll. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you, Michelle.
It's interesting to talk about this kind of polling in this election year.
And this poll is full of surprises, like a lot of polls. And one of the surprises that I find is some of the records that are doing best are actually the records that take a lot of listening to get through. And those are not usually the ones that make it to the top of best of lists. They're usually the ones that, people will cite as things that they loved over time, but not floating to the top. And one of them is a record by a fellow who goes by the name of Bon Iver. B-O-N, next word, I-V-E-R. It's a wrong spelling of a French word that means good winter.
Mm-hmm.
And Justin Vernon, the fellow who did all of this music, calls his record Bon Iver because he spent 3 months running away from whatever people run away from, bad relationships and all that other stuff, and went to his father's cabin up in northern Wisconsin, alone with some recording equipment, and just made this absolutely stunning, out-of-the-blue record.
I am my mother on the wall with a soul. I'm moving water so slow.
Music's beautiful, but boy, he whatever happened left quite a mark on him. He's talking about love leaving rope burns.
It is absolutely one of my favorite records, and not unlike another record that is slowly gaining to be a favorite of mine and making it surprisingly onto the charts. It's one by a group called Fleet Foxes, who I've only heard of this year. They're a pretty young band from Seattle.
I was following the eye, 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 was following
the heart and soul of this band are the voices. So it's not the guitar and the drums that are carrying it. It's not one singer. They're all singers. The first thing I thought about, and you hate saying this because you don't want to pigeonhole them, but the first thing I thought about in my reference points is Crosby, Stills, and Nash or something like that. But there's lots more than that to this band.
Bob, it almost has a 1960s Up With People feeling.
Oh, you know, if they were in the room here, they would scowl.
So there are bands that are, at least at this point in time, a little bit more obscure, but there are some more familiar bands, I understand, that actually made it to the top of the rankings.
You know, and Death Cab for Cutie.
A storm.
My Morning Jacket are two bands that have been around for a long time now. They've steadily built up a following, being young, independent. When we say independent, we mean on small labels, who are now not on small labels. And what's hopeful is you get these bands that you may fall in love with when they're young and they're just beginning, and that's what you like about them. But they have managed to mature, and we should play maybe something from the My Morning Jacket record. This record's full of many different styles. You can listen to one and you might feel like you're listening to Charlie Pride, and the next minute you feel like you're listening to Led Zeppelin. So this record's all over the map. It's one of the reasons I love this band so much. One of the things that I see in Death Cab for Cutie and My Morning Jacket, bands that have now been around for a while, is that you see them actually selling an awful lot of records, and you'll see them in the tops of Billboard charts. These are bands that, you know, given the kind of music they made 6 and 8 years ago, you never, ever would have imagined them selling a lot of records and selling out big halls and so forth. And so when you think of someone like Bon Iver, or you think of someone like Fleet Foxes, it's curious to think about 5 and 6 and 8 years from now if they will be ones who forge a new sound, a different sound, a sound that in some ways expands the attention span. So maybe there's some hope, because I like that in music when it takes a while to kind of fall for it. And maybe that's something that we can look forward to for pop music, because heaven knows I listen to too much pop music that in the first 10 or 15 seconds, you know the whole song.
Yeah, you hear the hook and you know you're going to hear it six times before the song's
over. Right, and I'm tired of that.
Bob, what's at the top of the poll right now?
Well, Bon Iver and Vampire Weekend were running neck and neck for a while, and now Vampire Weekend is taking a big lead. And if you haven't heard the Vampire Weekend, you should, because it's such a fun, upbeat record. You've got to find room and heart for a record that's this much fun.
Bob Boylan is the host of All Songs Considered. Thanks for stopping by, Bob.
Pleasure.
And you can hear some of our listeners' picks and vote for your own favorites if you go to the music section of our website. That's npr.org.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
With hits like Let's Stay Together, Tired of Being Alone, and my personal favorite, Here I Am, singer Al Green defined the soul generation in the 1970s. He's now a man of God, but Reverend Green's latest album, called Lay It Down, is strictly secular. Oliver Wang has this review.
There were few R&B teams more successful than Al Green and his longtime producer Willie Mitchell at High Records. Together, they created a string of definitive soul hits, and Green's first two comeback albums after devoting himself to the Lord were made with Mitchell. For Lay It Down, though, Green has taken a different tack, turning to James Poyser and Amir Thompson of the rap group The Roots. So you might expect Green's new album to feature scores of chart-topping guest artists and contemporary pop production, like recent efforts by Carlos Santana or bossa nova legend Sergio Mendez.
Love is everywhere, cause I know by the way he looks at me, cause the look, our love.
Unlike Mendez, Green goes in the opposite direction on Lay It Down. In the words of co-producer Thompson, this album aspires to be, quote, the true follow-up to Bell. That's Green's 1977 album, widely considered to be his last significant soul LP before turning to gospel. In a strange way, Lay It Down more resembles the retro soul stylings of such artists as Sharon Jones or Amy Winehouse, except that Green gave birth to the very trend those artists are now riffing on.
I wanna tell you one last time.
Producers James Poyser and Amir Thompson do an impressive job of recapturing the crisp precision and stirring sound of the high rhythm section, except with mostly younger players. There's Thompson himself on drums, plus the well-traveled Daptone horns of Jones and Winehouse fame. But the most impressive instrument is still Green himself. Even after 40 years, his glorious voice still aches with both sensitivity and sensuality, managing to make even melancholy sound seductive.
I just met you just the other day. Everything started flowing my way. Oh, yeah. I just love you. Really, I just love you for yourself.
If the goal was to create a credible-sounding Lost Al Green album, then Lay It Down mostly succeeds. It does have that old-time lovin' feeling. However, in recent years, some of Green's contemporaries have taken on more daring projects, whether it's Detroit's fiery Betty LaVette covering alt-rock favorites Amy Mann and Fiona Apple, or veteran soul man Solomon Burke going country. Lay It Down isn't anywhere near as adventurous. Instead, it's more like an old recipe rediscovered. Familiar, comfortable, but not anything you haven't heard before. Yet while it's not a reinvention, it can be a satisfying reintroduction. You only need to turn on the radio to hear Green's influence on pop music. Now with his new album, listeners can dispense with the imitators and hear the originator.
When I see you, I want to love you more and more.
Oliver Wang is a music writer based in Los Angeles. Finally today, we say goodbye to producer Martina Castro. She's leaving Los Angeles for San Francisco. We will miss you, Martina. Good luck.
And maybe a lot of people don't know that she's been directing the show. She's fantastic. She's a great director. She's also a surfer, so we hope she'll be catching some tasty waves up north where she moves to. Bye, Martina.
Day to Day is a production of NPR News with contributions from Slate.com. I'm Alex Cohen.
And I'm Madeline Brand.